time opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week, Under the Knife, Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Dimitri Panos.
Hello, movie fans.
So, did this reach the glaring lights of the night, or should it crawl back under the rock it came out
of? Well, it made me want to crawl under a rock when I was done, and I don't mean that as this being a bad movie.
Oh, it's actually supposed to creep you out, yeah, for sure.
It succeeded. It won.
I think it's very fitting that it came out this time of year after Halloween.
I like the movie. I'm not going to say enjoyed. I like the movie. Mm-hmm. It was its message that just made me feel dirty. Mm-hmm. Because we do see it happening, I think, around us today. Mm-hmm. So I love the performances. Mm-hmm. The direction I thought was spot on. LA at night. You know, Dan Gilroy, it was great. Mm-hmm. I loved its satire, in a sense, on news. You know, the obvious comparison, like you may
more
agree
of an
with,
indictment, I'd say.
I agree. I was thinking of Network, which I think is the obvious one. But the other one for me was Broadcast
News.
That
was the other one I thought of as well.
Yeah. So, and
not since those have we had something close to dealing with this subject.
No, there was a Burt Reynolds, Kathleen Turner movie.
You're right. You're right.
But not.
I couldn't put it in the same category.
It was watching Jake Gyllenhaal was a train wreck. I mean, he was so creepy. Mm-hmm. You just couldn't take your eyes off the person. I mean, mm-hmm. he oozed a charisma, but not the kind of charisma that makes you go, hey, I want to follow that guy.
No.
You know?
So get me away.
Yeah, he's just creepy. He was fantastic.
I thought he was, yeah.
I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, you can see why everybody's talking about his performance. It's clearly something that is warranted.
And I was, and I'm not going to lie, I was riveted mm-hmm. throughout. And, we came to the ending, and I just walked out. Like, I just got to shower. I got to scrub mm-hmm. myself. Like, we talked about it at Gone Girl. And this one, I just felt I should have watched this with a hazmat suit. I really felt dirty.
Yeah, you probably should know that if you haven't seen that. You know, going in, you need to know that. Well, yeah. It helps, I should say, because this is so unconventional in many ways. I mean, you have an anti-hero that's, amoral, sociopathic. I think
moral
those
compass.
Were fair.
Totally fair.
Adjectives for him.
Absolutely.
And he has little to no character arc. So, and I tend to like movies with good arcs and character.
Don't we all?
Development stuff. But, not all movies do and everything. And this one is really challenging in that way because there isn't that, and so you have to figure out a different thing. I mean, it doesn't even what you think about it, and you go, well, there's your protagonist, if that's who he is, who's your antagonist?
Right.
And you go, you don't even really have a specific antagonist, and some more often than not, obviously, the antagonist is embodied by a person or an entity, a government, whatever, something, but that's not this case. And it's almost, as I'm watching, going on, is it us, the human beings, who allow this and crave this kind of news? Is that the statement he's making? Is that what Dan is trying to get across? But because it's unconventional, you're a little offset anyway, which I think is a good thing for this movie.
Perfect, definitely offsetting
and
unsettling.
Yes, it is unsettling, and you kind of the conventions that he breaks are kind of fun and interesting and. But it makes you go, because there's no happy ending. I mean, there's no, and not that you need one or anything, but because of many of those things because there's no specific thing to root for, and you see, rather than an awareness come to a character's point of view and they start to see a better way or whatever that would can be conventional, you see the opposite. You know how there are traveling angel movies where the main character is a traveling angel and everybody around them changes for the better.
Right.
This is a traveling devil movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody starts to sacrifice or in some way lower their integrity or sacrifice it entirely.
I sort of think that they were, those characters were sort of kind of on that precipice already.
Oh yeah, clearly.
And he just,
clearly
they just pushed.
He just
kind of
opens the door. I don't even think he pushes. He just opens the door and they, like, especially Rene Russo's characters.
Absolutely.
It's classic. And you just see it, all the degradation of society just just slowly happening, occurring, and nobody standing in there for any kind
of... There was one character who seemed to have a moral compass in the newsroom, but he was always told to shut up.
Exactly.
He was always told shut up.
Exactly, and it was just like, it was barely put out there, and then quickly, and I went, oh, and I wanted more of that, just because it added some conflict that wasn't there. I'm going, please, let's just explore that a little bit, because otherwise it seemed like too much of the same. And I wanted something to vary that, to give us something to, I don't know, go ahead.
No, it was weird. And then they bring in a lawyer, which you don't expect to ever have a moral compass. Because for 2 seconds, the lawyer had like, well, maybe, you know, it's going to be... Can you blur out their faces? Well, yes. Yeah. Okay, then you're all done.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, well, it's a lawyer. It's holy.
So for many reasons, it's a hard movie to quote enjoy like a normal movie, because there's, you know, you don't have a good guy, bad guy to root for, all that kind of thing. Those kinds are dispensed with in this. But I think it's a wonderful, and it certainly has a point of view on what goes for news and how news is covered and what is covered and what is not covered, etc.
So particularly LA news.
Yeah, but I would say, you know, any major metropolitan urban area would have the same kinds of things. I would say.
Yeah, it was interesting because Dane Gilroy, writer and director, and I believe it's his feature direct. I believe it's his directorial debut. He was really totally, lack of better words, inspired. Mm. By LA local news, by Los Angeles local news. And, you know, there was a line that was thrown out, and I'm like, going, really? We're going to go there? And it was Bill Paxton, I believe, who said it. Or maybe it could have been Rene Russo. Mm-hmm. If it bleeds, it leads.
Oh, yeah, that's a common one that they've used for years now.
God, yeah. It was like, wasn't that the New York Post mantra? Like, wasn't that... Yeah. And in this movie, it just became more and more relevant. Mm-hmm. To that mantra, and you got to go out and get the shots, and and again, Dan Gilroy was sort of like he took his inspiration by watching the news and watching what was on the news out here
in Los Angeles in the morning,
and he noticed that there were these companies getting credit for the video thing now. I'll be honest, I hadn't really noticed.
I hadn't paid attention
and to it. And so the one thing about this movie is that it did expose me to something new that I'd never paid attention to. But now the next time I watch local news, I'm going to be looking for that little logo bug.
Right.
Because it's not from your local news station. They're not doing it. And when you think about it, how can they be first on the scene if they're reporting it as news? You know, they have to be called to it in order for it to be news. So somebody's filming this and selling it. So
Which is like weird,
paparazzi.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Buying and selling news and stuff, and it now becomes a capitalistic thing. And you're going, wait a minute, isn't there some question about that right then?
Yeah,
because in order to get a better price, you have a better product, and then you see why Lou makes the choices he makes, because he looks at it completely as a business venture.
Oh,
he has no moral compass or no problem with, you know. Oh, the body was there. I'll just move it here because it makes a better shot.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting how we got started with it all, too. I mean, we open up with him trying to trespass into...
Oh, yeah. No, he's trespassing.
Yeah, he was attempting until a security guard comes. Yeah,
but he'd already gotten onto the property, got through the gate, and started, you know, cutting down the chain link fence to sell later.
And that's right. And he comes across the security guard and... You notice the security guard has a nice watch.
Wonderful watch.
And then he just proceeds to beat the shit out of him. And,
for the watch.
Just for the watch.
Exactly.
He goes to a pond. And then when he's driving around, he notices the news crew.
Yeah,
and he gets out. He's like, what's this?
Exactly. And, you know, in a sense, you know, because anybody who's been reading about this will know that, I don't know how many times they talk about how Jake never blinks in this movie, but especially in the beginning part of it, he does have this wide-eyed look about him like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Oh, I could do that.
I could do this.
And you're just going, and it's, you know, in a weird, demented sense, it's the American dream, you know, this young upstart, you know, he works hard,
he
does his homework, you know, and he learns, he's a fast learner, he says.
Yeah. And, yeah, anybody you know, can get on
and
Google.
He succeeds.
Yeah.
He succeeds. And, you know, where everybody else who has empathy or any kind of compassion, he just walks right over because he doesn't care. Doesn't care about anything.
Nope.
He has his goal in mind. He's single-minded and focused. And he employs all the stuff that he's read on the net about how to
and everything
succeed.
It's about everything that's wrong with the way to succeed, at least the way that we were born, raised, brought up, we can learn. I mean, I don't think anybody, I mean, it would be interesting to talk to somebody who thought that, hey, you know, he's right.
He's succeeding. Providing jobs for the community. Because he eventually gets his two vans. He's a taxpayer. And that's kind of, that's where the satire comes in too, because you kind of have to look at it a little satirical because there is no opposing force that says, wait a minute, this is wrong here. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Or if there is, it's very, very quiet. I mean, it's not like it's really part of the movie.
It's very subdued. And unlike a movie like Wall Street,
right,
when you have Michael Douglas's Gecko there, right. We know.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
The Wolf of Wall Street, you're right. Yeah. Anywhere where you look at the Wolf of Wall Street is your...
You look at the avarice and the greed or whatever.
And that's your inspiration, you know. But in those movies, there was the opposite side.
Yeah, and this
especially
one, this
in
one,
Wall
It kind of dispenses
Street.
With that.
Yeah, there's nobody... Anybody who has that either gets told to shut up or they get killed.
And I think that's the point, obviously. Well, not obviously, but that's what I took away. That was my takeaway from the Dan Gilroy script and movie, was that there isn't an opposing voice, really, now. We're so accustomed, we become a nerd to it, that we just allow it and think, oh, okay, this is the way to get ahead. And because it's so prevalent, we just go, okay, we accept it. So as an audience, even as you're watching the movie, you're kind of doing what I think his commentary is on what society is doing.
Yeah, and that's why I felt dirty. You walk out and
you have a conscience. Those people who wouldn't have a conscience probably go, hey, that's a great...
but this movie basically says that anybody with a conscience, you're not going to survive.
No, you're not. And, it's like, you know, Countryville. And,
right, and Dan... Gilroy, to his credit, he flat out has admitted that he breaks that rule. He's like, I started to write the movie, and he wrote the guy. He's like, this guy isn't going to change. Mm-hmm. And he goes, so that by the end, he goes, it raises the questions. What does it say about us as people? That we're allowing this to happen. Mm-hmm. And
that we're not only allowing it, we're almost...
applauding and commending it.
And wanting it, because we're the ones that watch the show. The only reason why we watch the shows are such that they think there's an audience there is because there's an audience there.
Yeah, and Lou continually gets rewarded for it. Whether he's manipulated that reward in one way, shape, or form.
Negotiated.
Or negotiated. That's another way to put it.
Yeah.
And look... We've perhaps run across these people, you know, we would have liked to have run over these people outside of running across these people in our lives, but there are people within business that do get rewarded for being, for doing bad things.
And it all boils down to the bottom line, because pretty much our main character thinks of everything as a transaction. And I think that's the other point, or one of the other points that he's making, Dan, is that... In a capitalistic society, when you take it to the extreme, that's it. It's all about the bottom line, and everything else is secondary, tertiary at best.
And he does say.
Yeah.
And the world is increasingly reduced to transactions, and that the human spirit portion of it is shoved
aside. And you can't quantify empathy and compassion, so it's hard to have that be part of the equation if all we care about is the bottom line.
And there's a, you know... The self-perseverance. I mean, there's a fantastic scene in the movie, when he and Rene Russo go to the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, yes, they go to dinner for their negotiations.
And, it's amazing how he manipulates that he wants more money.
Yep.
And,
not all he wants.
He wants some fair trade. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but he's like, he wants to have sex. Not a relationship.
No, not at all.
No.
But he's got all that. We share the same hours and all that kind of thing. So
and we have
very
needs.
Practical.
Yeah, we have needs and we should.
And I like all the women.
There's no reason why this shouldn't happen. Exactly. And when she says, you're out of your freaking mind. Yeah. Like, she more or less says that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, we're done here. Yeah. And then he lays out, well, you know, I understand, you know, I done a little bit of my research. And yeah, you and go to companies, to, you know,
points out how desperate she is.
And you're about coming up in your 2-year contract mm-hmm. over here, and you're part of, you know, you're heading up the lowest rated. Mm-hmm. I mean, he made the situations like they weren't on the cusp of it.
No.
They were the lowest rated.
It's a great negotiating tactic. Right. Everybody uses it who knows how to negotiate. And he framed it very well to make his position stronger and hers weaker. So, boom, done.
And yeah, and we're all done. And, you know, it makes her. But the mere fact is she had a choice. Mm-hmm. She could have said,
oh, yeah,
F but, you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he, for lack of better words, he appealed to her depravity.
Yes.
And she was like...
Or desperation, too.
Desperation. Yeah. And
but the only
and
thing
we
I didn't
know
like
that
about,
they slept together.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I didn't like about that particular storyline, because I thought that was great. I thought I loved it because right. I thought Renee Russo did a fabulous job. I think it was written very well
really
for his complex character, all those kinds of things. The only thing I didn't like at the end when he brought in the last one and, you know, he's negotiating, not even negotiating, and he gets everything he wants, was basically, look, when I come in here and tell you a price, I don't want to negotiate.
Yeah, that is my lowest price.
Yeah. But after that, yeah. The next scene with her, she's like, she gets everybody out of the room and she goes, what do you want? And she almost looked like a schoolgirl, like whatever you like. She's and that to me was that was just a small thing where I went, oh, I wish she had done something a little bit more challenging with that, because it felt like it was way too much of a turn for her too quickly to so easily capitulate. Because I liked it when she was struggling with it, but then at the end I was like, okay. And it was, she almost was a little too schoolgirl for me.
I just thought that once she fell off that precipice or walked through the door, as you said.
I just think it's much more interesting if you see the struggle and she still does it. But this time it's like, okay.
Like we discussed, mm-hmm. none of these people.
No, none of them make good decisions.
Their
compasses
are so far off. And Nina Romina.
Yeah, that's Russo's character.
Renee Russo's character was... She played her so well, because when we first meet her, she really is a tough as nails character, and you don't even know at that point too. This is what I thought was very interesting. You didn't know at that point that this is the lowest rated. Why am I paying attention to the lowest rated television broadcast? But we find that out later
on that it's the
lowest rated.
Because where else could he start?
and that's what we learn about lowest rated.
Yeah.
She's
because again he goes for the
right.
Lou goes for the Achilles heel, which is the weakest person or weakest. Well, what was the line that he says that you told me about 2 minutes ago? But Lou knows people like a lion knows a gazelle.
Yeah, he understands people the way a lion understands
and
a gazelle.
Clearly, he knows the weak one, and he can separate from the herd.
And I looked at Nina when he walked in; she was no bones. Mm. And hey, and I actually thought, oh, look, she's got this well-oiled machine. She's got it going on. She's head of this company. And then we found out it's the lowest rated.
And she's got the night shift.
You got the night shift. And you're coming up on 2 years, which you're probably going to lose your job again.
Doing his homework and really good negotiation.
On Google.
Yeah.
Like that's the other frightening thing is that his hard work was predicated on being able to Google. Seriously.
But, well, I don't agree. I don't disagree. Absolutely. That's kind of how he did everything. You know, he was not only was a night crawler, he was a night owl. The guy he was always, you know, looking up something or finding an advantage here or exploiting a disadvantage of somebody else's. I mean, that's what he did. That's just what he did. He was amazing at it.
And that's like the other dirty part, that you can look up so much about, that he knew Nina's number. Yeah.
And not that he know it, but he also was able to interpret, okay, what that would mean to him, and how could he spin that to make it horrible and so debilitating for her that she was in such pain that she'd have to fall and just say, yeah.
She just had to say, okay.
Exactly.
All right. You're right.
I mean, that's how he was good at, because, you know, I could read that information, but I might never put it together like, if I do this and say that and point that, boom, 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 I've got her.
Yeah. Because imagine what would have happened. Like, just say she walked away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and just say she loses the job.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that this movie is portrayed, he would just go to another network, find another person,
exactly.
Raise amongst them. All right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're out of a job, but I'm still.
He's a wonderful predator. Because he looks kind of unassuming. I mean, he obviously lost a lot of weight, and he looks kind of, and his hair's
he's just creepy.
He is creepy, and he kind of hunked his shoulders a little bit, and he walked kind of funny. But so all that, by the way, congratulations to him again. Did a fabulous job. But he, because he doesn't look so threatening that when he's threatening you, even then you're just going, I'm not sure I got threatened, but that sounds really horrible.
That sounds really horrible, and he threatens you with violence.
Yeah, but in a very... remind me of Hannibal Lecter when he's beating up the guys and his blood pulse rate never gets above 80 or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, that's kind of who he is.
Yeah, and he's like, you cannot take my deal or else I could just beat you to a pulp.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a time where I disbelieved that he could do...
Or that he would at least... try it, because we saw what he did for a watch.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I just figure that this guy is, he more or less, if he says he's going to beat you to a pulp, he'll probably beat you to a pulp. Yeah. We talked about movies like Network and Broadcast News. News, yeah. In each of those movies, too. Obviously, I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to, not going to take it anymore.
What people are willing to do to... Yeah, how far they're willing to go to get to ratings and all that.
Yeah, and then in Broadcast News, though...
It was played a little bit lighter.
Played a little bit lighter, but when you think about it, you had Albert Brooks, who's the seasoned news guy. Holly Hunter, a seasoned producer. Yeah. And then William Hurt is the he's the good-looking guy who knows how to read. He knows how to read.
He knows how to look good reading.
Yeah, he knows how to look good reading. And when you learn in that movie that he manipulated, like, an interview with the cameras, you're like going, oh, God. And he ends up succeeding.
Yeah.
Where Albert Brooks, who should have
it's very similar.
Yeah, it was weird how similar it is, but I like Broadcast News better. I mean, even though people didn't end up together in that movie, so to speak.
I think you got to give him credit for, first of all, writing the thing because it is so unconventional. How are you going to sell this? It's not an easy sell because it's not an easy movie to watch, and it's not an easy movie to root for, but they made it very well. I think they were very true to what he wanted to do. And it looked amazing. I thought all the cinematography at nights. It had a sparkle with a seaminess. I mean, it was very. I don't even know how to describe it.
It showed different parts of LA, other than sometimes when you see Los Angeles in movies. We did get the obligatory type of helicopter night shots, the Michael Mann, the sparkling, twinkling lights. But then we did see the seedier side of things. And, they did shoot on location out here. Mm-hmm. They won, as Dan Gilroy puts it, they won the tax break Los Angeles credit that will allow them to film here. Mm-hmm. And it took the 80 locations. In the movie, 27 days. You would ask about days. So 27 days, 24 were nights, and they were in a row.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That's, so we were on nights for weeks. It was a wild energy. Mm-hmm. And so you see all this effort put in there, and we did see a seamier side of L.A., but not unlike things like movies like End of Watch.
Yeah, because of Jake Gyllenhaal being in it and being in the car for so much of it and stuff, like, you could see the parallels there.
Absolutely.
But it was very effective in this one, I thought.
And I'm going to go. This is one of the things that fascinates me about Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. Been a great actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can be in a movie like End of Watch. Mm-hmm. He was amazing in The Prisoners, I thought, with Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. I thought he was just great in that movie as the detective. Mm-hmm. And then he comes out in this movie, does something completely different, and he's so creepy in this movie, and he sells it. And this is a guy that's come a long way.
And taking
way
risks
from...
too, because End of Watch was certainly a risk, and he helped produce that. This one is a risk, he produced this. So finding material that's different, finding ways to make films that are smaller budget but have a good impact,
And he gets to stretch his acting chops.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'll
get an nod for this, right?
I would think.
I don't know how he wouldn't.
I would think so. Like, it was one of the things that we discussed when we were done. It was like, he definitely has potential to be nominated and take one of the five slots for best actor. Usually the Academy likes these sort of kind of transformations.
They do.
In a way.
I mean, the one thing that might not get him is because, again, it's not a huge arc. So he's not like he's not really putting himself emotionally through, this huge torment and everything like that. But he's very consistent, very creepy, and he's effective. You can't come away with it going, well, he phoned it in. I mean, it really. They thought about this. Then how do I make this creepy yet charming? And like you said, he had a weird charisma. I mean, that's a delicate balancing act, and they were able to capture that.
Yeah, I agree. They were, and like I said, yeah, his charisma was. People listened to him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, people listened to him. He grabbed people's attention. He was a salesman, con man.
But let's be for me, what the people who really listened to him were already people who weren't quite at their best. Because you just said they're already close to the precipice. Yeah. That's right. So it would have been interesting to see what would happen if he went up against somebody.
Well, he did. Well, I know. He went up against the cop.
I know,
who knew that he was a sham.
Clearly, and which is, cause, so that's what somebody could obviously see right through it. But then it was, you know, I would have liked to see him have been challenged a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because that was the only time he was really ever challenged. Because really, you know, it was pretty fairly easy for him to rise. You know, I mean, he was just, oh, okay, now I got to go do this. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't. You know, usually in a typical thing, your protagonist has to go through all these trials and tribulations to come out. You know, you got the forge and the fire and all this. Not so much.
No, I agree with you. And that's what makes the movie feel, feel dirty because, again, I've seen it happen up close and personal.
Sure.
And people get rewarded and like,
for
and
despicable
as the cop,
things.
Yeah. And as the cop, not even the news guy, because the news guy's like, guys, what we're doing is
can't
like
say
wrong.
That. Shut up.
And he would say that.
He's dismissed.
Like, he flat out wrong. Mm-hmm. The cop was like, literally.
Yeah. She knows what's
I
up.
I see through.
This is what I think. Yeah.
Like, I think, and she lays it all down, and she knows.
Yeah.
And there's nothing she can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just got to sit there, like, and again, in everyday life, we see people who get promotions, who get rewarded, and. You're just like, oh my God, how can they not see right through that person? And
they're not playing fair.
It's not even that they're playing fair. Sometimes it's not even like a game. It's just, this is the way it is. Hey, I'll take the accolades. Mm-hmm. But it almost feels like some of us, sometimes we do have those, we have special Ghostbuster glasses on that we can see through people like, you're a sham. Like, and you can go to Jake Gyllenhaal. He's a... It's him!
Yeah.
And people are like going, yay, crazy. Hey, there you go.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Now you have two news vans. Yeah. interns!
And all it took was killing a couple of people.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and manipulating so that other people got killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, Jake Gyllenhaal, he sells it, and I buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other cool thing is that they said that Jake was literally driving. Again, when we talk about 24 night shooting, he did about 75% of his driving in this movie. Jake's an excellent driver, Dan says. And yeah, he did a lot of his own, like, driving, stunt driving. And as we, look, if you're watching us, you've never been to Los Angeles, you're planning to come to Los Angeles, driving sucks. That's right. I said it. It sucks out here. I've seen the
most
bizarre things.
At night on a set. Or,
you know, I don't know, because I've run into those people who are driving like Jake Gyllenhaal. And, you know, and I love how he goes from like his freaking like... Like, I don't know,
Ford
he had like
Escort,
a, it was like a Pacer, and then he gets like a Charger.
Yeah,
and
nice.
It was like, knew that he was making bank.
Yeah.
So thematically is basically where this
movie. I'm sure he negotiated a very good price for that car.
Just like in the pawn shop.
Yeah,
that was another great.
Yeah.
Another scene, he steals, we see a guy riding a bike, and 2 seconds later,
Gyllenhaal's hawking it.
He's in the pawn shop with that same bike, and he's trying to negotiate.
Louis Bloom. Yeah. All right. So we've talked great length about his acting, and you know, I wanted to say a little bit more about Renee because we haven't really talked so much.
Yeah.
About, but this is, I mean, I don't. I know that
married to Dan Gilroy, by the way, is their husband and wife.
And I had read an article how she had wanted to get back to comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is quite what she was thinking of, but she does a great job in it, though, and it's good to see her back on the screen.
You know, she's been in Captain America. Oh, Captain Thor.
She's always, I always enjoy to see her.
But it was nice to see her in this kind of a role.
Yeah.
Because literally she got to stand out more than, say, in Thor. Great as Thor's mom, she's given more in this. And we do see her defeatism, her deflation. And again, hers, in a way, maybe we could argue that she's sort of, does she have an arc, or was she always that way? Because,
well, it's one of those negative arcs where she, you know, she gives in and basically...
Yeah, because when we're at the
in the beginning,
Mexican
she's much more, she's holding a line of integrity, quote, very, very thin line. You know, she's saying there's certain things I'm not going to do. I'm not spending, you know, my full budget on so and so. And then she does, and then she's, so we see her slowly have an arc, but it's not really what we traditional arc.
Yeah, and what was great about her performance,
that's why
too.
I said it's a traveling devil. Everybody makes compromises along the way. Even his ride-along buddy, his intern.
Oh, his intern.
You could see his arc. He starts out as, you know, he's not any way, shape, or form a capitalist.
No.
And by the end of it, he's negotiating. You know, he's whole, you know, he's, so you can see
but
him
not even doing it.
No, he's not. No, horrible
he had a
job
moral
at
compass.
It. But you can see him even having somewhat of an arc because he's under. You know, he's being imposed upon by the satellite.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, look what happened to
Jake
him.
Jake Gyllenhaal. Exactly. That's my point. It's like, every, you know, all these people making these decisions.
Well, and again, I'll go back to that scene in the Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. Up to that point, we've seen Nina's character as a, we believe her to be a strong character, and then just to see her slowly chip away.
Yeah.
And like, and then by the end of that scene, you're just like, you know, and she was standing up like, get the hell out of here. I'm not going to do it. And then at the end, she's like, all right, I got to sleep with
beat
you.
Beat her, too. Beat everybody.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, one of the scenes to Locke, one was with Nina when she was directing the story, telling the characters to sell it harder. And we had to cut, compress, and John compress it in a way that was amazing. And then the shootout chase. The way they craft that and the way John put together, like
John Gilroy, by the way, his brother.
Brother to Dan.
And brother to Tony, who was a producer.
Yeah, okay. It's all in the family. On this
yeah,
movie.
They did.
We always talk about collaboration. I've never known, like, this is family. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. Nepotism doesn't happen in Hollywood.
Never.
But when you look at these scenes and how difficult, you know, especially shooting at night and shooting, I mean, the car crash was a little bit like, I was like, wow, that's a big car crash for this kind of a movie. Like, did you agree? I mean,
at the time I didn't even think about it. What I thought was that it seemed perfect for the movie. I mean, I didn't really think of it in a critical sense. I was just, as I'm watching it, I was just, it just felt like, that's going to happen. Absolutely. It just felt like it was supposed to happen, and it did, and the way it did was exactly right. So, but I didn't really think about the fact that, well, yeah, this is kind of a big one for a movie of this size.
No, it was, you know, and then, well, let's talk about, like, what it cost to make this movie. I have that its production budget was about $10 million on its production, and the all-in hard drives and advertising was close to about $30
million. Wow. And it's killing it. It's killing.
Yeah, its opening weekend gross is
was number
10.
One at the box office.
It was number two.
Number two? It was number one.
No, it was number two behind Ouija. Or
really?
Ouija, yeah.
Huh.
It came in number two, but it did $10.4 million. Currently, it's at about $15 million. Now, look, we have a Rotten Tomatoes score of 94%. Okay, understandable. Its cinema score rating to me is it's a B minus.
Yeah.
So I think that, well, you don't watch trailers.
Right.
We know. I pay attention a lot to marketing and how that can affect box office. What's that going into? I think that Open Road and I think the marketing materials on this, their trailers, I think they really sold. They didn't sell that it was going to be as seedy and as dark and as grimy, but they sold a good performance from Jake Gyllenhaal, they an adult thriller. I almost think that, I don't want to say it was a bait and switch necessarily, but I think people may have gone in expecting.
Yeah, well, again, how
came walking out feeling.
Right, how do you sell it? Because if you sell it for the way it is, people are going to have a hard time. What kind of movie? I don't get it. But if you sell it as an amazing performance, which it is.
Yep.
And there's lots to sell. I mean, there's all kinds of fancy car chases and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't see the trailer, so I don't know how it goes off. But I would imagine if I'm in the marketing department, I'm going, how do I package this so I get people in the seats?
Yeah, and I think they did a good job in doing that. Now, my one umbrage with the trailer is that there is a line in the movie, And it's the, if you want to buy a lottery ticket, you have to make, if you want to win the lottery, you got to earn the money to buy enough money to buy the ticket. Yeah. Now, in the trailer, they play that line, and it appears in the trailer, like it's in three or four different scenes of the movie that he repeatedly says that. I only counted one time in the movie.
In the movie, yeah, he only said
and
that.
And I was like, well, I felt sort of cheated out of my other three times. Oh, really? But, you wanted to see but they sold it on the... They sold it on Gyllenhaal's rags-to-riches story,
that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, and they sold it on his perseverance. They sold it on his character. Mm-hmm. And they sort of kind of... You could see that he's a little crazy because they did have him punching the mirror, which he actually did. He actually punched that mirror, hurt his hand, and he wrapped it up, went, got stitches, came back on set. Okay, roll him. That's, you know, that's dedication.
Yeah.
But, you know, they sold that this guy could be a little on edge. On edge is different from being just creepy and dirty and ugh. Don't you think?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure, yeah.
You should watch the trailer.
Yeah, I will now.
Let me ask you, do you ever, after watching a movie, do you ever go back and watch the trailer?
No, I haven't, but I will.
Yeah.
It hasn't really been a thing, but I think I will just to see if it's the same.
It's very interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, Open Road's doing pretty well. And like you said, I think that its longevity, will last because of word of mouth. I think Gyllenhaal's performance was so good in this movie that that's going to sell future, like,
I would imagine, because he's going to get Oscar, well, they're already giving him an Oscar buzz for this, so I'm sure that's going to put people in the theater for that. And, you know, and let's face it, it's kind of a, well, it's exciting, it's taut, I mean, it has a lot of, you know, it's kind of a thriller. You know, I mean, it's hard to put it in a specific genre because it kind of, as I mentioned, defies convention.
Yeah, no, you mentioned something earlier on. I had said that it's a satire about our local news, but you had mentioned you used another word. It was an indictment on the media and what we as society applaud and reward.
Yes,
And that you know, I think it says it all in this movie.
Oh, it's, I mean, it has its point of view about what goes for news and how it's covered and what's covered and all that kind of stuff. Which, you know, it's fine. Make statement whatever you want in the news, I like that it has a specific point of view. I also was wondering. Is there any opposing viewpoint? And I don't think he was interested in making an opposing viewpoint.
You know, well, let me ask you this, because he learns about this world. He learns about this world by coming across Bill Paxton as Joe Loader. And do you think Loader did not have a similar sensibility to Lewis Bloom? I mean, other than he was a creepy
nightcrawler.
He was a nightcrawler.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think his sensibilities were as creepy or manipulative.
Well, I don't think he had the sociopathic.
Yeah,
I think he had some empathy, whereas I think our main character has no empathy.
None whatsoever. Yeah. And,
but, you know, they're very close to being on the same side of the coin as opposed to being on two sides.
They're close, but again, I think that there's a, because it's another really great scene where.
Well, let's put it this way. The fact that Joe Loader goes to him and says want to partner with him and give you an opportunity, I don't think that's something Lewis Bloom would ever do.
No.
So right there, it shows that they have a different sensibility. He'd rather work with somebody to make a success.
And it was twofold. I did get that Loader's motivation was to, okay, I don't want to compete with this guy. Yeah. I'd rather work with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring him on the team. Like,
Him work, and then we get together. Mm-hmm. But there's that great line where Lewis Bloom just says, shut up, get out of your own head. It's dangerous in there. Like, I don't want to listen to you anymore. And the line, get out of your head. I mean, it's a great line. Yeah. And again, it says it all.
Mm-hmm. Even the lead up to that line, which was great, he was very, actually, you know, Lou was very polite in the beginning, like, it's not something I'm interested in, but he, because the other guy's being persistent. And I thought, you know, how many times did Lou butt up against somebody and, you know, had to try three or four or five times to get, and that was very interesting to see how Lou handled it on the other side. Here they're kind of negotiating in a sense, and Lou at some point gloves are off and he just goes, and it's kind of fun.
The line is, get out of your head, it's a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out of your head, it's a bad
neighborhood.
Which
is weird because in his head is a horrible neighborhood.
It's the worst neighborhood that you could even imagine.
Yeah, it is terrible.
And is terrible. And then we see what happens to Joe Loader,
right,
know, later on.
Yeah, because of what our main. I mean, that's the lengths he's willing to go. He's going to, you know, mess with his van such that he'll crash, and then he'll get to film it.
Yeah.
And I go, wow. And when that scene happened,
and it also gets rid of his competition.
Absolutely, like, yeah. And the whole thing kills two birds with one stone. Well, and it's very expedient.
And he steals the idea.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
no,
it's just, great. Nah. It's again, it's like, you know, writing wise, congratulations, Dan. but also the way, even the way it was shot, you see the red Mustang way off in the background. Right. You see the thing here, and you're going, oh my God, he's going to mess with a van.
Yeah,
and, then and of course he does. And the way he kind of comes out, fixes his shirt, goes, and there you go.
Walks back.
Yeah, and then, you know, when he's not going to whatever, the 211 in progress, he's waiting for the other thing, and, you know, it's like, what is he? Oh, he's going. I mean, all of it was nice. I mean, that part was good. And when I say nice, it's horrible. It's horrible
it's
what he's doing, but it's
it
done
was
well.
Orchestrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree
and
with
I,
you 100%.
You know, but, and the things I liked about this movie were I loved the indictment of the news media because I happen to share that sentiment that what passes for news is ridiculous, especially when you watch morning news. And I'm not saying that the major networks are any better because sometimes I go, really? This is your lead story with all this stuff happening?
Right.
But anyway, that he chose to demonstrate it in this particular way, meaning Dan Gilroy with this film.
Right.
It because it's, you know, it's so weird because in some ways you want to laugh at it because you're so saddened by the idea that it's true that you want to laugh at it because please let this be a satire. But deep down you kind of go, you know, I don't think this is far off from the truth.
I couldn't agree with you more because I couldn't laugh at it. Mm-hmm. Like there was really not much levity other than
they had some great funny lines and funny scenes.
Well, there was the scene at
the
Diners.
Fact that every time something would go wrong and he'd just pontificate with some ridiculous thing he'd read off the net and you go, you know, okay, that might have a lot of sensibility to it and everything, but then when he says it you realize he's just spouting it off and he may at some point assimilate it, but he misses the underlying core of, you know, of the other
his interview too when he was hiring his intern was pretty humorous as well.
Oh, it's hysterical.
Like that's,
oh,
you know, that's a great scene because he's got nothing.
When he's you're not in a really good leveraging position, you know, you know, things like that. It's like, you know, it just cracked me up.
And you know, there was one other thing too, is that the sex is implied.
Right.
We know that it happens, but they don't,
because it's really, it's really already perfunctory in a sense. And it's, we have needs and it's just something he has to it has to happen such that he can, maintain himself. It really has nothing to do with his goals.
Yeah.
It was just something that I have to take care of though. Otherwise it'll distract me from my goals. It's kind of like, it's just because I have to read these things in order to be this way. I also have to have sex every once in a while in order to completely get my goal.
And we,
it really didn't seem like something he cared about or wanted other than something he needed to do.
It's something that he needed to do. And you can just get the sense that it's dirty.
I don't think there was a lot of...
And it's funny because apparently people asked about, like, you know, apparently, like, Gyllenhaal has even said, you know, he's joked of the unseen Nina Lou Bloom tryst.
Yeah.
It was, you never see it, and so many people have been like, what are they doing in there? And the way people ask it, I'm like, you're a pervert. Gyllenhaal says, you're a pervert.
But here's
the
thing.
You think of the character.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, I didn't miss it. I didn't really need it. But now that we brought the question up, I would go, well, that might be interesting. How would this guy, quote, negotiate the bedroom?
Yeah.
Because that would be odd and weird.
Yeah.
I didn't think the film needed it. And again, I didn't want it, but that would be interesting to see how did that first experience go?
I sort of kind of am glad we didn't.
I mean,
see
that would
it.
Be I a mean, weird creep yeah. factor.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have just laughed. It would have been like borderline porn. Like, you know, that seediness, it plays like a noir, which we never dig out of the shadows period ever. Mm-hmm. And it is a noir in a sense. I never thought of it until we're just talking about it, but that undercurrent of,
except it doesn't have culture. It has all those and the feeling of it and all that other stuff, but
there's no
right.
hero to bring out.
No, and there isn't the internal code and all that other stuff. He has his own code, but really it's something he's just supplanted from all of the sources and stuff like that.
He's gotten it from Google.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So and again, it's not the same, but it has those feelings in some of the same kinds of
right Yeah, but because it's dark.
Yeah,
some scenes in the rain. Yeah, exactly. A lot of
there's
it is
a dame
shot
involved
in the shadows.
Yeah,
There's the undercurrent of seediness and corrupt, and that's that's what this is. This is a corruption of our news media that we buy into.
And what's also interesting is that our main character is amoral. I don't know how else he's described, but when he's doing something that's corrupt, he doesn't see it as corrupt, which is it's an interesting thing. Like when he's moving the body at a crime scene in order to get a better shot before the cops come, I don't think he even for a second goes, wait a minute, I shouldn't do this because this might, if I move the body, it might affect how they investigate and help discover how this happened and bring somebody to justice. He doesn't care one, it just has no, it's not that he doesn't care. It's not even as his thinking that all he cares about, oh, I got to get the shot because I can negotiate a better price. Da, 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 da. And I just found that interesting. It was weird and again, off putting and
it was unsettling.
It was very unsettling. But I also thought that was something I hadn't seen before that he's so willing to, to go into that house when there's the multiple homicides.
Right.
And the one guy's alive.
That's what I was going to ask you. Okay, he was clearly alive, right?
He gasped.
Wasn't imagining
he
gasped.
He's alive.
Yeah,
he's alive. But again, because he's a sociopath, that's not a human being. That's not a person. No. That's just an it.
Yeah.
That's like saying, it puts the lotion on its skin. I mean, that's the same thing, right?
Right.
So it had that, there's no value there because there's the only value in that particular thing is how I can shoot it and what I can sell for it.
Yep. And, it's interesting because going back to the body moving on the accident, that was the scene that brought me back to broadcast news.
Which scene? At the end?
No. The scene
moving the body. Gotcha.
The body
from
out so we can get a better shot.
Right.
That's the scene, although it's much darker in this movie, but that's what William Hurt's character does. He manipulates an interview to make himself seem more emotional.
It differs in degree, but not in kind.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I mentioned, and then I started thinking about broadcast news.
Yeah.
And I've seen the movie within the past year, and I was like going, oh, we had three people in broadcast news here going on. But
if you look at network and then broadcast news, and if you want to throw in the Burt Reynolds one and Kathleen Turner, was it? Yeah.
Right.
And then this one, let's look at the degradation of news in our real world and go, because network, even though it's very, well, what's the word? I mean, it's kind of stuck in the time because of the dress and
corporation,
the look of it.
Corporate.
But it doesn't, in sentiment, it still holds up because it's still the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The local news here too does really in ways push fear, push.
Oh yeah.
Because
they're going for the amygdala. Anything that scares the crap out of me, keep them tuned in. It really is not about news other than just keep them tuned in.
Yeah. And even Dan, says, basically, because he lives in LA, he does say it's a study of local news, and he believes it's accurately portrayed in terms of the narrative they sell about urban crime creeping into the suburbs.
I think that's accurate because crime is actually down in LA.
Is it?
The board. Yeah. Which makes it even harder.
Watching this movie.
No. But for like, but again, I don't know if those stats are accurate because some people have come out and said, well, they've been marking those wrong, et cetera.
Right.
So I don't really know. So I should double check my facts on that. But let's just say that it is for a second.
Yeah.
That would make it more difficult for news to get something that they would consider viewable.
Right.
And if it wasn't, then they'd love it, which is just a weird thing.
And it's what the audience goes for. He points out
that your news media would want stuff to be like this so they have something to sell. So, and it's like, what?
Yeah, well
it just seems
odd.
Let's
think about this. And when we talk about real terms, because Dan Gilroy, an example that he gives is, it was a few weeks after Robin Williams' tragic passing, and he was watching his beloved old network, Nightly News, and they had there's a clip of a helicopter circling his house the day he died. And he's going, what's the higher purpose, the glimpse of a grieving widow? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you need that?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
All of these things were factoring in.
Yeah.
Like, and when you think about this movie, that this is what they're putting on TV. What do we care to see about?
I don't know. I don't understand because I live a stone's throw away from where the Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman are. So when all that was happening and there was news media and vans and all that stuff, satellites there every day, every day for mm-hmm. weeks, you know, months and stuff. And the thing was, they would do these remotes, and all that would be behind them is the outside fence and the condominium and everything like that. And they'd have tons of reporters, and that's their remote. I go, what could be the value of upsetting this entire neighborhood, which has already been upset, by showing the outside of a condominium and a fence?
Sure. Yeah.
What is the purpose of that? How does that shed any new light on anything?
And I can tell you, and I don't want to belabor O.J. Simpson, but yeah. I was back home still mm-hmm. at that time. I was having dinner with my mom at a nice little Italian restaurant nearby, and on the TVs, we were watching the car chase in real time as mm-hmm. the Los Angelinos yeah. were. And, you know, it's in what he is selling, when you think about, too, what's going on in the world today and what Nightcrawler mm-hmm. is purporting too, is like we can't get away from it.
No,
and unless we do turn off the TV,
well,
or
that's
we ignore
the point,
it. But as soon as you turn on your computer, though, if you
yeah.
whatever your website is, they always have some news, and then we see an ISIS beheading.
Yeah, I mean,
and like.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the right there is okay. Well, and I don't know that there is an answer, but that would have been interesting to see. You know what? Not that this movie was trying to answer everything. It wasn't really answering that. It was just showing it and demonstrating, highlighting it. But there is no other answer except to turn it off and make sure that there is no audience for it. But even is that accurate? Because if there's no audience for it, are you being in some way putting your head in the sand?
Right.
So yeah. It's just, which for me made that an interesting film, because it did bring up a lot of questions
yeah.
and a lot of them were left unanswered. And then you have to kind of look at least I did, your own role in this. What kind of culpability do I have? Do I share in this Schadenfreude?
And then we'll take it a step further too. And what Nightcrawler also purports too is, like, you know, if news is going to focus on this,
yeah.
and focus on, you know, then, and we do watch it, say, because, you know, we got to get our news in one way, shape,
right.
or form, outside of government politics or whatnot. But it also impacts a viewer and audience as to, like, we all live in our own, you know,
sure.
we live in our own neighborhoods, pockets. Right? Our own pockets, right?
Yeah.
If somebody foreign comes into that pocket,
mm-hmm.
because of whatever we've seen, like,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, I'm not saying for everybody, but mm-hmm. sometimes there may be that, who is this person?
Yeah, well,
what's this person doing here? Why is this person doing here?
But that's what they're feeding off.
That's what they're feeding off of. And that's what this movie...
And in some respects, I think the movie's trying to say, look, don't blame it on the Louis Blooms of the world. They're just following the money. I mean... That's what
well,
they
are
doing.
Following the money. It is a transaction.
Exactly.
But how do we then, and, you know, and this is the interesting question.
And the more we don't stop it, the more Louis Blooms will have.
And again, the question is, how do you? I mean, we're the people with the Ghostbuster goggles on who can see mm-hmm. this and point it out. And so the other thing that we've seen, well, that I've seen, I can't speak for you, but like sometimes when you go to raise that flag,
mm-hmm.
like that, reporter, you just mm-hmm. shut up.
You're drowned out.
Yeah, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, just shut up. Go off to the side. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, and this is where Nightcrawler really poses these questions. And, you know, it's great that we get to talk about it in this mm-hmm. forum. It's not a movie that I'm going to buy on Blu-ray. I don't suspect that I'll revisit it.
But would you consider, you know, maybe not a movie that you enjoy, but would you consider it an important film?
You know what? I would, if I were teaching a film class,
yeah.
if I were teaching a film class about how media impacts society,
mm-hmm.
this would be a movie that I would mm-hmm. show. I would show it along with a movie like Network.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that this is something that I would show to somebody about social media impact.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's all this guy is getting his information. He's not earning his right to be where he's not earning his success. He's just Googling and manipulating. And some people are going to go out there and say, absolutely, he's earning it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only way we can know that he earned it is because he got it.
Yeah.
And that's
and
the only metric we have.
There was no comeuppance.
No. But yeah, that's not what this is.
No, this movie is not going to offer that. And some people are going to say, I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing
mm-hmm.
because within the framework of this movie,
sure.
Perfect. But again, to recommend it, you know, you would have to, I wouldn't recommend this to my mom for
well,
sure.
Yeah.
But I would show it to, I would use it as a tool
mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that, I don't think that they blew up or manipulated situations to get a point across so much.
Let me ask you this more specifically, yeah. Because you just brought that. I was just about to ask you this question. Okay, so the whole, well, not the whole movie, but a lot of the movie is predicated on the idea that if it bleeds, it leads. Right. So do you think he used, meaning Dan Gilroy and the filmmakers, did they use the gratuitous bleeding too much in this movie? Or do you think it was just right in this movie? Do you think they were doing it just to get people in the theater? I mean, where? How do you feel about that? Because in making the movie, you are basically being gratuitous in some sense.
No, and I agree. And Dan Gilroy and all I think the way that it was portrayed in the movie, mm-hmm. we get to see it as an audience. And again, I had actually thought that this movie was going to be a hell of a lot more, let's say, violent. Mm-hmm. But the movie, and when it showcased certain things, it was done, like when he first walks into the house.
Which house? The first one with the kids or the triple murder?
The triple murder.
Okay, go ahead.
When he walks into the triple murder house, mm-hmm. we only really see a lot of that aftermath when he brings the tape back. Mm-hmm. They play it at the station. Mm-hmm. And then we really see it when it's being showcased on the news. And even at that, like when you look at our news, mm-hmm. it's clips of violence. Mm-hmm. It's a clip, a clip, a clip. Onto commercial, mm-hmm. and now a word from our sponsor.
And,
it snuggles the snuggles the bear, and, yeah. You know, and that's the way I thought that this movie, it portrayed that local news mm-hmm. kind of a feed where, yes, it was gratuitous, but I've seen far more violent movies yeah. this year.
Mm-hmm. And then the question is, wow, how accurate is that? Because doesn't it make you want to, I don't know if it, but it did for me, I was like, because that seems really accurate, but I would love to be a fly on the wall in those newsrooms how they make their decision on what they're going to air and what they're not going to air and how and why and when.
And as far as exploitive, it was exploited to its degree mm-hmm. of exploitiveness. Like I didn't find the movie.
You didn't think it was overly done.
I didn't think it was overly done.
I thought it was effective in what it brought the central issue to mind, and it kept it in the forefront. But I don't think it overdid it. I don't think it overplayed the hand.
No, I don't think so either. And I know, I agree. And I think it really straddled that line, and it showed us in a way that, in a sense, we're already accustomed to seeing.
Yeah,
and that's sad to say.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is weird, you know, because I'm going, okay, yeah, that is like the first time he goes out there, and the first time he gets a better shot than Joe Loader, and he's really in on it from a different angle, and you can see, and the newsroom said, wow, oh, that's, you know, a good angle, you have a good eye, that kind of stuff. I'm going, yeah, I don't know that I would see that on morning news, but then again, maybe I would. It was right in that, like you could see that, yeah, you know, they probably would lead with that, and I'm going, wow,
yeah,
just the thought that I'm thinking, I was like. In the morning, this is okay news because it gets them ratings. But that was the difficult part of me as I'm watching it. I'm going, that's right. Oh my God, this is terrible.
Let me ask you this question.
Okay.
How many times in local news, I'll throw this out to everybody. How many times have you heard an anchor, mm-hmm. Reporter say with the warning,
oh yeah, yeah,
be warned, exactly. This is grisly.
Yeah,
you know,
graphic.
This is very
viewer
graphic.
Discretion
viewer
is
discretion.
Yeah.
Now that is very relevant and prevalent in today's local media.
Not only they say it on purpose so that it gets everybody to go, oh, what's going to show? You know,
yep.
they don't do it to tell you not to look. They do it to, hey, guess what? I'm going to show you something horrible. Come on, look.
But do you find it's – I didn't even – again, this conversation bring this all out. I mean, but I believe we are hearing those words – not suitable for all viewers.
Yeah.
Discretion advised. We're hearing this a little bit more than we were, say, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Well, I mean, let's go back to the threat categories, and we had the color scheme on the, you know, it's like, oh, they kept telling us we're in an orange, you know, and I'm just like, they're doing that, you know. That's part of the reason to get people, excited enough or scared enough or whatever to pay attention.
So do we look at this movie as two things? It's an indictment on our mass.
Yeah, on our
news
media.
On our media, and it's an indictment on our people who don't have the moral compass yet succeed, mm-hmm. regardless of their immorality.
Mm-hmm.
And do we also say that news, in a sense, can be immoral? Listen, I don't want to indict the news wholly. There are some times where there's the good. there's the tech story, right. There's this good story.
I think he's trying to limit it and narrow the scope to just local news, but you know, you can extrapolate out that, you know, and I don't think it's unfair to say that we've had a challenge with our news media, mm-hmm. and you know, because as soon as corporate interest gets involved, they have to be considered bear in mind the bottom line, because that's what their fiduciary responsibility is. So right there, it gets compromised. That's what gets compromised from the get-go.
I wanted to ask you. I wanted to talk about another specific scene. It's the scene where, Lou manipulates the shootout. So right, yeah. It's the scene where he's clearly withholding evidence.
Yeah.
He has these guys,
and he should turn it over to the police. He doesn't do any of that.
Now, here's my thing, because this is one way I thought the movie was going to go. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God, he has legitimate footage that he didn't orchestrate himself that they could put on the news and work with the police, and this would bring that station to the top.
Yeah, like, and
he would
too,
make a ton
he'd be the
of
hero,
money.
Yeah.
Because they would be able to arrest these people.
But that's not what sells.
By morning's end. But it would have sold for that night.
I would think
right? It would have sold for that night. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it was very interesting that he didn't make that choice. But, you know, again.
And he made the choice to instead put it in his back pocket.
Absolutely. Because I think he would. He just went, well, it's a great image and everything. But the image that you want is the one it bleeds, it leads.
And if I have this in my back pocket, I can go to Google. I can look these people up.
Yeah.
And which he does.
Yep, he finds them.
And he finds them. Now, this is a scene, too, like, okay.
And he's got two cameras.
He's got two cameras now.
On the diner.
Now, would you agree that I knew, little intern boy, like, as soon as he got out of the car and he's like, oh, come here, he's...
As soon as I want more money that he was, oh, you're a dead man.
Yeah.
You are a dead man.
A dead man. Not even fired.
No, you're dead.
You're dead.
You're dead. You're dead.
So
he didn't have any trouble killing Joe Loader.
No.
He didn't have any trouble beating that guy for this guy. Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think.
He didn't kill Joe Loader, but he got him in an accident.
So. Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. Why, my one question is, okay, so he manipulates the kid to go out. Mm-hmm. To the car. We know that the bad guy is there. Rick is his intern or his employee. Mm-hmm. So he sends Rick out. He goes, no, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And
he hides behind the shot.
And then he's not dead. Mm-hmm. And Rick gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the villain, the bad guy, crawls out of the car and he sees Lou.
Lou with the camera.
With the camera. He's facing. My thing is, why didn't he shoot him?
That's interesting. The only answer I have for that is that, well, he heard the sirens and he figured rather than shoot the guy, I better try to escape. That was, you know, it was kind of an odd thing.
But he didn't run. He stayed in the middle of the street.
Well, he tried to run because he limped. He was already hurt. So
yeah, I get that.
All I'm saying is that was the only thing. Because I had the same question. It's like, why didn't he just shoot him?
Yeah, because he shot the other guy with the camera.
Why is he not aiming his gun? The only thing that stopped him from aiming his gun was right after that, he heard sirens, he turned, and he started to move away. That's the only answer I have for you.
Okay.
But I did have the same question. I was like, why didn't he shoot him?
Yeah.
But I think the point of that is the character knew enough to go, oh, wait a minute, this guy is the lead in the movie, and he can't die or anything like that. But... in some weird way, I think that's the writer or the director making a point that even this guy who just orchestrated this kid's death is going to get away with it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's gotten away with everything. So that's the only thing, you know, when I look at the whole thing, that's when I go, okay, well, that's why he had to. Because that's in keeping with the rest of the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
So
even though
dead to rights, he could have just shot him. But if to shoot him there would mean, you know, kind of betrays the rest of the movie in some sense.
Yeah, then the bad guy gets a moral comeuppance himself.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
No, it was just one of the interesting things because I remember saying it when it happens. Like, why didn't you just shoot him too? If you shot the other guy with the camera, but yeah, I guess the sirens.
Because I thought for a second he might shoot him.
Me too.
And then I thought for a second he would go.
He's going to manipulate him.
He'd get the camera and go, make sure you get it, and he'd get the shot himself of his own blood and hat because then he would not only. Blood would lead, but it would be his blood. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's where they're going to go. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
which I thought that would have been successful.
Sort of kind of like
well.
A network-ish kind of.
Yeah, kind of that. Like, but you know, he's going to make sure he gets a shot and make sure, and he would, before he died, even it's going to be worth, you're paying me $20,000 for this, even though he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, I said, well, I would have been fine with that one too.
I mean, for 5 seconds, I was thinking because he did lean, the car is overturned.
Right.
He leaned down.
Yeah.
And I was like going, he probably like negotiated something saying he was going to make that guy a star in the news or something. He goes, he's going to send another guy. He can kill him or something. I'm like, the way he manipulates people. Like,
yeah, you never know.
That wouldn't have surprised me either.
Yeah.
But, and again, that the way that scene built too, mm-hmm. I get it. This one, I totally give credit for direction, for editing, mm-hmm. because it all took place. It started outside the little diner.
Yep.
And the way that it happened and the way that it came down, it's a very intense scene. And then you had the big car crash. Mm-hmm. And then the shootout in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. That was really, I thought that was a very well done scene.
Yeah. And I haven't read a lot, but I was reading something before we came in today, and somebody was, a couple people had talked about how, unfortunately, the car chase scene at the end and the wreck and everything kind of took the movie in a weird direction and stuff like that. And I was trying to figure out what they meant by all that. And I went, but there were car chases me all the time. And, you know, they're always chasing the news. So I didn't know. It was very strange to me what that was saying. And but the question is, did you feel like the tone stayed throughout? Okay, you did that. Okay.
Yeah, I did. I mean, because we talked about, was that car crash too big? And now in this surreal, bizarro, dirty noir world that Mr. Gilroy created.
Yeah. I think the comment was that wasn't it enough to have a shootout at a diner? Did you have to have a car chase? And it felt like it was gratuitous. And I went, again, that's kind of what this is. I mean, the whole
thing. That's what happens in Los Angeles.
Yeah. The whole thing was, you know, first of all, he couldn't go into that diner and get those shots. I don't think at that point, I don't think the cops would have let him.
Yeah.
So he still needs to get his guy, and he still needs to get the final shot. Anyway.
Well, but my whole thing is, Lou couldn't have asked. Louis Bloom couldn't have asked for a better outcome.
This is amazing.
Because he was either going to get the money shot in the diner with the gunfight, and it would have ended right there.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead, it's like, get in the car, start it up.
Exactly.
He's like, because it went from there to outside. He got to follow, and he got to film.
And then there's that whole thing about making news rather than actually just chronicling it.
Yeah.
So, and he was clearly way overstepped that line. And again, you have to, where is that line anymore? Because these days, you know, the whole Edward R. Murrow approach to news is like, man, not so much.
And it's funny because, again, well, I'll point back to that cop.
Yeah.
This is what I think. Like,
oh, yeah.
Manipulate,
yeah.
Like, you withheld evidence. Mm-hmm. You had this. You tracked this down knowing that you were going to get more of a story.
He had a good story, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some people believe it because they want to believe it, you know, because the alternate is worse.
Yeah. And his excuse, too, it's like, oh, my God. People buy and they do. They do buy this. They buy into certain people's hype. There's a great thing that we were talking about when I'm looking up quotes. You have to make the money to buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. But Lou Bloom also said, what if my problem wasn't that I don't understand people, but that I don't like them?
Mm-hmm.
It was, what if I was the kind of person who was obliged to hurt you for this? I mean, physically. I think you'd have to believe afterward, if you could, that agreeing to participate, then backing out at the critical moment was a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
that's when
I'm
knew he was dead.
As clearly as I can.
That's when I knew he was going to kill him.
And he was a great orator.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, he was a great.
It was wonderful. And the thing is, I think he did understand people. He knew exactly how to manipulate, you know, again, call them from the herd, get their weak spot, and manipulate whatever you can to get what you need.
Yeah.
And I thought he was amazing at that.
And you know what's amazing? Another amazing thing about this movie, when we talk about breaking convention, no backstory. Backstory.
Exactly. That was
another
thing.
We don't know where he comes from.
We have no, and I go, as it was happening, I'm going, well, how did, you know, because we see, and the first thing he's doing is cutting that cyclone fence or whatever, and I'm going, he's such an entrepreneurial, you know, enterprising guy. It's like, really? That's what he's doing for a living? Because he so quickly goes to the ranks. But it was almost like He was made to do the Nightcrawler, the night crawling, and that's where he excelled. Well, and he even says that in the movie, I found something that I not only like, but I excel at and stuff, and it's a good use of my talents and all this other stuff. But I was interested in knowing a little bit about his
background. How does a person get to that moral depravity or black hole?
Yeah, exactly.
A moral, and,
he has no compass.
There was another great line, too. There was another person that actually saw through him. I completely forgot about this. It was the guy that he was selling those stolen goods to. The wiring, the fence.
Oh,
and
right, yeah, yeah.
He was appealing to him for a job,
sir.
And
he says, I would never hire this thief.
And he goes, no, done. He goes, I'd never hire a fucking thief.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gyllenhaal, he just does the smile. He's like, okay.
Yeah. And it kind of comes, and that's one of the reasons why when, what's his name, his buddy, Rick? starts negotiating again and opening up again. I'm going, he's never going to hire you now because of what he learned from the guy. He goes, you never hire somebody who you know is going to mess with you.
Yeah.
So you.
And he even said that to him when he had his dying breath.
You're a dead man. You're a dead man. So that's what I liked about the character is that, oh, yeah, he's right. I'm never going to hire somebody who I know to be a thief.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we can agree that this. This year, this is a movie that breaks all convention, pretty much.
It does. It's
as far as its screenwriting. But it didn't make it a bad movie. It just made me feel it was a dirty movie.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the point of it. I think, the moral ambiguity of it all. I think the idea is at the end of the movie, you are supposed to question certain things and really call into question other things. And I think that's, for what he was trying to do, I think he was successful in that effort because it certainly does. I mean, and I think that I don't really know what Jake's reasoning for being part of it, other than I thought he probably felt it was a good script and a great role for him.
Great script,
but
got to.
I don't know what message or ideas he was trying to put forward, but it does do that,
And it creeps in. Yeah. Again, not necessarily in a bad way. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned this. If you watch our Whiplash,
right?
I had mentioned that it seems that our movies this year, within the past couple of months, they seem to be going back to almost like having a 70s flair. This movie could have been filmed in the 70s in a sense, the way that it was shot. It has these sensibilities.
The anti-hero kind of things.
Anti-hero, not necessarily happy endings.
No.
Moral ambiguity.
Sure.
And I'm using that term loosely, especially in Nightcrawler, and that the movies are not having happy outcomes and good outcomes. And is this, I would say, can these be used as societal messages for us? Do we say, Jesus, if we continue on this path, look what's happening? Can people come out of a Nightcrawler movie? Or look what happens at the end of Gone Girl. She gets away with everything. Everything. She gets away literally with murder. Mm-hmm. And, you look at that, and we talked about how there was no comeuppance for our character in Whiplash.
Right.
And a lot of 70s movies ended that way.
Mm-hmm.
It almost
seems the one thing I liked really about this is because it did have that point of view, so that you could it's not a message movie, but there is that indictment, so to speak. So I think that heightens that to a point where, because most people don't even realize it, they're not even aware
it's
happening.
You think it's not a message movie? That's
I don't think a message.
If it's an indictment,
I think he asked more questions than he answered.
Okay,
so a message movie would have a specific,
absolutely, you are correct.
So that's what I mean by that. Not that he doesn't have a point of view, because he certainly does have a point of view on this, but the other parts of it, as opposed to the news part, he has a definite point of view, but this amoral person over here doesn't really have a point of view about him.
No.
It just is what it is. So
we're seeing, I think, more and more people rise to the occasion without having earned it or having the right wherewithal to get to that point.
And that's a reflection of society too. I mean, we live in the world of, let's go on a reality show or whatever. They haven't really done anything.
And I can honestly say it's none of us here with Anatomy, AfterBuzz. We all take from our esteemed producers who got to where they are today because of hard work and what they're doing. Yeah. And, so that's a nice glimmer of hope to think about. Mm-hmm. But this movie, we have, like we said, I have specific example that, we're seeing people without that work ethic. He has a work ethic, but it's...
Yeah. It's twisted. He just
it's a very twisted work ethic.
He just has no morality, that's all. Yeah. He has no empathy for anybody, and or anything.
Yeah, let me throw this out, more of a legacy thing outside of Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. Do you think, say, 20, 25 years down the line, somebody can pop Nightcrawler in and it could be like their, like, will they be looking at Network? Will they be looking at a movie like Nightcrawler?
You would hope that this would be part of the last straw or the tipping point where you start to go, society as a whole goes, yeah, really, we don't want this anymore. Not the movie, so much, but I'm talking about the news.
I understand, yeah.
But I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of faith.
It's like, I'm just wondering if, like, 25 years, it's like, will people look back at the time that we're living in right now?
But look at it, because the same things the Network called into question is the same stuff we're questioning now. That's the same thing. So,
no, it's true.
I mean, how can you say that?
No, it's true.
It'll be different then.
But will it be held up in that, like, regard? Like, will it
I don't
be,
know,
is this a time capsule movie?
I don't
movie?
Think so, because Patty Chayefsky, who wrote, you know, Network, of course,
right.
won the Academy Award and stuff like that, I don't know if this, they feel different. And that one, for whatever reason, seems like more of a, you can see that more being a Oscar darling, so to speak, and why it won, and for what it was not, because it was not just an indictment, but it had grander scale. Yeah. It was, you know, it wasn't, because this one is too easily written off as, all the car chases and all that, it doesn't have the weight of the gravitas that a Network did. I'm not saying I agree with that, but
I agree with that, people will see it.
The same way. Even Broadcast News, didn't it win?
Yes.
Okay. But you can see, you know, it had the guys behind it, Jim Brooks.
James Brooks.
Who wrote it and directed it, of course, and, you know, it had Holly Hunter and all those, everybody else, Albert Brooks and,
William Hurt. And Holly Hunter.
Exactly.
And,
all those people. So that was, it had some gravitas in it and everything. I just don't think, because this is a smaller scale, I just don't think it will have that kind of weight.
Yeah, and I would say that it doesn't have the accessibility as those movies do.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, the other one you could see that, well, especially Broadcast News, which you could see that there was.
Yeah, and there's an audience reaction. I would venture to guess that if Broadcast News were to come out today, the cinema score would be an A.
Probably.
You know, where this one was a B minus. And and again, I think it's because maybe.
I think it's a subject, because it's an amoral anti-hero as lead, I think that's too challenging. For people, because even in Network, you know, we have William Holden character who's really starts to follow the Faye Dunaway into this dark area, but even he comes out of it, and you can see that he tries to retain his moral compass, etc. So but this does none of that.
Yeah, this is pure indictment, but it'll be interesting to see 25 years if people look at it as a time capsule of 2014, and if, you know, perhaps media has changed somewhat, or to see where things go. You know, as far as Oscar and Academy Award, I definitely think Jake Gyllenhaal could be in the running for Best Actor. I mean,
I think because he's got now a body of work that people are really respecting, I think that he probably will.
Yeah, yeah, and I can see this being a hit on the screener. Yeah. Circuit when those start being shipped out to people.
It's not a conventional film. It's not an easy film. But I appreciate that it was made. I love
Same
it.
Here.
I'm glad it was. I'm glad we have. I think there's room in the market for a movie like this.
Oh, absolutely.
And I hope they make more of them like this, because I think it's challenging and it's because we have plenty of movies that aren't, and there's absolutely those are fine movies as well.
Yeah, and I think it came out. As opposed to coming out after the holidays, this isn't the kind of movie you want to get hit over the head after
really
the holidays.
Not really a holiday movie, no.
Going in at Halloween, I think, was a little bit of a risk for them. Mm-hmm. But let's say, listen, they were going into the second week of a PG-13 horror movie.
Yeah.
This is rated R. Mm-hmm. It is this movie has a point of view, an indictment on news. It's almost a satire. It's dark. It's seedy. Yeah. It came out. They marketed it pretty well, I think. Coming in at number two, doing $10 million for this kind of a movie, I think is pretty good. Yeah, you know, I think it came out at the right time.
I'm still so impressed that they made it and their budget was 10. Wow.
Yeah, no, I think they did a really good job. Again, please let us know what you think as viewers who saw this movie, listening to us. Mm-hmm. Did we miss a point?
I'm sure we did. I'm sure we missed many.
And
but that's okay.
Yeah.
Let's restart the conversation. We love to have you guys continue.
You can end it. And believe me, I've seen some of your comments. Sometimes I've ended it.
That's fine.
But in all honesty, I mean, my final thoughts about Nightcrawler is that I am much with you. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I saw it. It is, it's, I don't want to make it sound like you're taking Manderson. It is sort of an important movie. Mm-hmm. It definitely has like a message to sell. I don't agree. I don't want to agree with it, but it happens. Mm-hmm. But it's there. It's it happens in real life. Mm-hmm. I wish it didn't.
Yeah.
I don't see a repeatability of me. Hey, come on over. Let's watch Nightcrawler. Let's see this. Maybe we can learn something.
I don't know that there's going to be a lot of repeat people.
Yeah,
I don't think a lot of repeat business for this one.
You know, but I think it's notoriety. I think that going into Academy, I don't think that... I'm sorry, strike that, reverse it. I think we will be hearing more about this movie as we get into the height of the award season.
I can see him getting a nod, meaning Jake. I think on the other... I don't know about Dan. I mean, again, I give him credit for writing something unconventional and just making it right there. It's like, wow, good for you.
And let's talk about like his unconventionality in this. We always talk about movies and character arc.
Right. And there's no character.
There's no backstory. No character. We don't know anything about Jake Gyllenhaal. But we still.
But for some reason, the movie has a structure to it, and it works. And again, because it's not conventional, you kind of go, "Wow, how he made that work." That would be a challenge. If I were given that task, I'd be going, "How do I make this work? Yeah. How do I get people to be interested in this when there's nothing likable or you know, followable with this main character?"
Write it. Sell it, market it, and you know, sometimes marketability, sellability, or playability, I should say, sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. You know, I think that they did a really good job marketing this movie to that rated R adult crowd. Like I said, we have been coming off of a good spat of good adult
R movies,
R rated
Gone Girl,
movies.
You mentioned earlier.
Oh, Gone Girl and
even Whiplash, a lot of people,
you know, Whiplash,
I think we put it in the same.
And so there's a lot for adults to go to, and regardless of how you come out feeling, like this movie is made to make you feel a particular way, and it succeeds.
Yeah, I think it does what it wanted to do for sure. I think he made the movie you wanted. I think he's happy with the way they made it, and I think.
And it was a good collaborative effort. Everybody put in their look. Nobody was there for a paycheck. We talked about Renee Russo. It was great. She acted in this movie. Mm-hmm. It was very good to see her. Yeah, it was great. So,
all right.
Stuff.
Well, that's our last thoughts. You tell them where they can find you.
There you go. At DMovies1701. That's my Twitter account there. So,
you can
always
write to us at AnimateMovie.com and everywhere else here at Popcorn Talk Nation.
Popcorn Talk Nation.
So, you go. Only place you can find me is right here next time when we do another Anatomy movie.
Yay.
We'll talk to you next time.
Take care.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.